David Morris, as we do Tuesdays at this time, from Rules.org, a project of Minneapolis-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Hello, David Morris.
Hi, Wendy.
How are you?
I am just fine.
You know,
thank
I've been teasing
much.
People all morning about our discussion with you today by saying you're going to hear something about President Bush's Supreme Court nominee that could have a direct impact on how we function in the state of Minnesota, and nobody's really talking about it.
Well, it's true, and it's good that it's an election day, at least the primary election day today. I mean, people are going out to the polls, raising their rights as citizens, and at the federal level, the Congress, the Senate is exercising its right under the Constitution to cross-examine John Roberts, and almost all the reporting is, who is John Roberts? Will he be in? What is the Democratic response? And so forth, all of which is very, very useful. But really at issue here is the interpretation of the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights is one of those odd parts, if you will, of the Constitution that we all love and we all hate. There have been surveys done every about 10 years where someone goes out into the crowd, if you will, and reads and gives them the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, and then asks them if they approve of them. They don't tell them what they are. They just ask them if they approve of them. And the majority of Americans each would not approve of them.
Really?
Right. Because the Bill of Rights is something that was put into the Constitution after the ratification of the Constitution, because people at the state level were saying, we're not going to ratify this Constitution unless there is some protection of our individual liberties. And what the Bill of Rights does is it protects the minority against the majority. So it's actually probably not surprising that the majority, when confronted with that, would say, well, not on your life. I don't want to protect the rights of people to do what I don't like. And so that's why the Bill of Rights is so incredibly important. And John Roberts is one of that group that calls themselves conservative, although I have no idea, you know, what that term could possibly mean when it comes to defending the individual against the tyranny of government. But in any case, they call themselves conservatives because they believe that the Constitution needs to be looked at literally, and they believe that the only rights that are given to individuals under the Bill of Rights are those that are specifically enumerated, that is, those that are specifically listed. And that's in some ways what the argument is all about. And specifically, there are two, just to back up a little bit, and maybe to back up a lot of it into the 1780s, we had just won the war of separation, if you will, against England, and we were governed by a constitution called the Articles of Confederation. And that actually worked, you know, fairly well, but the problem with the Articles of Confederation is that it required unanimous consent by the states before you could do anything. And that's why when George Washington beseeched the states to allow taxes to be raised, so that, now in this case these were not income taxes, these were taxes on customs, on imports, to allow the taxes to be raised so we could clothe and feed the people at Valley Forge and elsewhere, the state of Rhode Island said no. One state said no. And therefore, in fact, it was a tattered army and a starving army that actually won the war against against England. So in the 1780s, we decided to restructure the governance structure so you didn't need unanimous consent, and you could have three-quarters of the states approving a new constitution. And in 1787, the constitution was presented to the states for ratification. Now, it wasn't voters that voted on it. It was their representatives in the state legislature. These were all white men. African Americans couldn't vote and women couldn't vote.
Right.
And you needed property to vote. But in any case,
you had to own property, but
yes.
Okay.
But in any case, you did not have a this was the vote of at least some of the people, and the discussions were incredibly spirited. I mean, it was if you look at the difference between the discussion about the ratification of the U.S. Constitution and the current ratification or discussion about the Iraqi constitution, it's laughable. Between 1787 and 1789, there was unbelievable discussion, and it was discussion in public and discussion in private and debates that were all written down, all publicly available in the state legislatures. There were, at the time when you wrote essays, you usually wrote them under a pseudonym almost always.
And why?
James,
to
well,
protect yourself?
No, I don't think it was to protect yourself as much as it was not to to be too egocentric about things. But in some cases, it was to protect yourself. Ben Franklin wrote under an enormous number of pseudonyms, although everybody knew it was Ben Franklin. But in the case of the Federalist Papers, which was the defense of the Constitution, it was James Madison. That Primera and Hamilton that wrote these sort of essays, and James Madison called himself Publius, from the ancient Roman statesman, and you had these enormous debates, and what happened was that the Constitution was approved by three quarters of the state legislatures, but very narrowly in some states, very narrowly, and in each one of the states they were very clear that they are only approving it under the condition that when Congress first met after the ratification of the Constitution, its first duty would be to develop a Bill of Rights. And it was very clear, and Congress understood that. You know, several states, in their formal ratification of the Constitution, asked for such amendments, and others ratified the Constitution with the understanding that the amendments would be offered. So that was the first business, was to, because the Constitution otherwise is basically the structure of government, but in the case of the Bill of Rights, it is how you defend the individual's liberties.
So are you telling us, you were talking about conservatives, you're talking about like George W. Bush and his buddies in Washington who define themselves as conservatives. But what does that mean then when you're talking about which allows us things like, you know, the government cannot create a religion and say you have to be a member of that religion, you know, the right to have, I believe, isn't it the right to bear arms, the right not to have your property searched without due process, you know, actually showing a due cause and a judge saying, yeah, okay, it looks like you have good cause to search these people. Are you saying that they want to get rid of some of this stuff?
Yes, they do want to get rid of this stuff. I mean, they want to restrict it. They want to have what they call a strict interpretation. And the strict interpretation, I mean, one of the specific part of the Constitution that we're really talking about now is Article 9 of the Constitution. And Article 9 of the Constitution is just a few words. I mean, the marvelous thing about our Constitution, unlike those of most countries in the world, is that it's mercifully brief. And the Article, Amendment 9 of the Constitution says, one sentence, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And that was put in there by James Madison and on behalf of the states as well. And it was put in there because some people felt, and I think legitimately so, that if you had a Bill of Rights which enumerated, that is, that listed rights, it would be implied that those were all the rights you had. And what they were saying was that, you know, they were doing this in 1789 and it was supposed to last forever, and they wanted to make clear that there could be additional rights. What's important about that is that that has been the amendment that has been relied upon by the Supreme Court in the expansion of rights in the 1960s and 50s and 70s and so forth, where they said basically, look, for example, the right to privacy. There's nothing in the Bill of Rights that says that you have a right to privacy, specifically. Mm-hmm. But what the Supreme Court said is there must be a right to privacy. It couldn't possibly be that they would allow the federal government to do certain things. And the case that established the right to privacy in 1965 was a case where the state of Connecticut prohibited the sale of contraceptives to married couples.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court said, no, these married couples, you know, had the right to privacy. They had the right to, you know, to these products. And when Judge Bork was nominated for Supreme Court, the key issue related to Bork is that he was very clear that there was no right to privacy in the Constitution, and he didn't believe that, and therefore he would begin to overturn sort of 30 years of precedent. And Roberts, when he was a lawyer, a young lawyer for the Reagan administration, wrote an amendment in which he used the phrase, the so-called right to privacy.
The so-called?
The so-called.
He used the term so-called. Boy, that actually sheds a little light on his attitude, doesn't it?
Right, that's a quote.
Okay.
And so, I mean, Pete, the right to, terminate a pregnancy, is under the privacy, issues, but there's many others now as well. Tapping your phone, is a right to privacy, intercepting your email is a right to privacy, breaking down your door, searching for drugs is a right to privacy.
Let me ask you a question. We're talking with David Morris. David, you had read something about Article 9, but I thought we were talking about the Bill of Rights. And what you read and what I'm reading looking at Amendment 9 are different things. What you read didn't say what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Is that what, against unreasonable searches and seizures? Is that what you're talking about here?
No, that's not Amendment 9.
So I'm not understanding the same thing. Okay.
Okay. The right of people to be secure is Amendment 6.
Okay.
Of the Constitution. The Constitution, of course, has many amendments.
Yeah.
But the first 10. Are considered the Bill of Rights. And by the way, they actually proposed 12.
Okay.
12 amendments, and 10 of them were accepted. So the First Amendment, most everybody knows, which is the amendment that, that allows, makes no law respecting the establishment of rule, allows the exercise of the freedom of speech and so forth.
Okay.
And the Second Amendment, has to do with the well-regulated militia.
Okay.
Can you own arms and so forth? And the one that you were reading was the sixth, and
okay.
I'm talking about the ninth. And the tenth amendment is one that says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. Two amendments are really very key, and in some ways the importance of those amendments is that they're amendments that lead to the interpretation of the Constitution.
Far as states' rights and the federal rights.
And individual rights, exactly.
Okay. And individual rights. So this is a matter of who's going to tell us how to live our lives.
Exactly.
How much of a determination will we ourselves as individuals have? How much power will the state of Minnesota have to tell us what we have to do? And how much power will the federal government have to tell Minnesota how we're allowed to live?
That's exactly
okay.
Right, and that's why conservatives, I mean, it's an odd term. Back in the debates on the Constitution, there were two groups. One was called the Federalists, and one were called the Anti-Federalists.
Mm-hmm.
And the Federalists were those who wanted to centralize power in government, and the Anti-Federalists were, if you will, the Libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've reversed that completely. There's a group called the Federalist Suburbs was a member of, which is the conservative group, and the Federalist Society believes that supposedly believes that we should limit the power of the federal government. But the problem is that John Roberts' history is with the federal government. He started as a lawyer for the Reagan administration, and so he started as a lawyer for the executive branch.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you begin to perceive things from the executive branch's perspective. So, Roberts really, believes in an expansive view of government rights, government authority, government power, the same as Gonzalez does, possibly the next nominee, to take O'Connor's seat, who's now the Attorney General. And this is a very, very difficult moment in American history to be anointing, if you will, the exercise of state power, especially the way it's being exercised these days.
And what was your quote from John Roberts again about so?
John Roberts, as a lawyer writing in the Reagan administration, he wrote of the, and I quote, the so-called right to privacy.
We'll continue in a moment. David Morris, our guest from newrules.org. Information about John Roberts we're not hearing in the mass media. This is the guy President Bush wants to head the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll continue in a moment on the Wendy Wilde Show. This is AM 950, Air America, Minnesota, 926, 26 minutes after 9.
You're listening to the Wendy Wilde Show on AM 950, Air America, Minnesota. Where the left is right, and the right is wrong.
Meet some real power women on Women on the Move. No, I'm not talking about governors or company CEOs or even your boss. I'm talking about non-traditional women athletes who generate power all on their own. I'm Ember Reichscott Young. This week on Women on the Move, meet a national champion power lifter who is barely over 5 feet tall and 100 pounds. Attorney Mara gives new definition to the term power of attorney. She's a giant in powerlifting and a national champion in the bench press of 182 pounds. She can squat 2.5 times.
David Morris from newrules.org, a project of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, talking about what the ultra-conservatives who've taken over the White House and who are trying to put this guy John Roberts in the Chief Justice seat now on the U.S. Supreme Court, what they intend to do. And one of the most telling pieces of information nobody else has brought forward, but David Morris tells us, John Roberts has been quoted as saying, or using the term, the so-called right to privacy. And I was quoting Thomas Jefferson when we're talking about the Bill of Rights. And it was pretty stunning to me. If you look at the intent of the people who wrote our Constitution, our forefathers, I mean, listen to this one more time and let it sink in. We hold these truths, this is Thomas Jefferson writing, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, if they're white landowners, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, Jefferson writes, governments are instituted among men, deriving their powers from the consent of the governed. That means we allow the government to do its thing, not the government tells us. David Morris, do you think that this new ultra-conservative power structure in Washington wants to exert more?
Are exerting more federal power. I mean, that is in some ways the essence of what they're doing. I mean, when they said, you know, I remember, you know, Bill Clinton saying the era of big government is over. Well, actually, the era of big government is now.
But I thought they wanted to drown it in a bathtub, or was that just a gimmick that they
used?
No,
I think that what they want to drown in the bathtub is the power of government to regulate corporations. But what they've expanded enormously is the power to regulate our private and personal lives. And for some reason, they still consider that a conservative. You were reading from Thomas Jefferson and the preamble to the Constitution. Thomas Jefferson was not at the Constitutional Convention. He was in France at that time, representing the United States. But there's an interesting correspondence in which he writes to James Madison and says, "You have to have a Bill of Rights. You have to have a Bill of Rights." And James Madison responds to him, and I quote, "My own opinion has always been in favor of a Bill of Rights, provided that it be so framed as not to imply powers not meant to be included in the enumeration," which is why James Madison, when there was a Bill of Rights, put in or helped to put in the Ninth Amendment that says that simply because it's not listed here doesn't mean that it's not a right. Now, Roberts not only has called it the so-called, you know, right to privacy, but he, in another memo that he drafted for the Attorney General, he derided the court's 1965 ruling about contraceptives for married couples, saying that there was no fundamental right to privacy protected by the Constitution.
But, now, but you're telling us the Ninth Amendment says that just because it's not listed here as a right doesn't mean it's not already a right.
That's right. Correct.
They
correct.
Meant us to have
rights. A right to privacy is something that I think everybody, it just commonsensically, which is what the Supreme Court did in the 1960s, just commonsensically you could sort of understand that the Bill of Rights itself, in terms of its overall objective, had to do with the right of privacy. Now, during his confirmation hearing for the appeals court, Roberts refused to say whether he believes there's a constitutional right to privacy. And right now, as he's being questioned, yesterday the Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee were, their mantra was, we can't ask him what he thinks about anything, we can't ask him what he thinks about anything, and they use as a precedent the hearings around the Supreme Court nominee Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But Ginsburg, when asked a specific question about the right to privacy, said, and I quote, There is a constitutional right to privacy composed of at least two distinguishable parts. One is the privacy expressed most vividly in the Fourth Amendment. The government shall not break into my home or my office without a warrant based on probable cause. The government shall leave me alone. The other is the notion of personal autonomy. The government shall not make my decisions for me. I shall make, as an individual, uncontrolled by my government, basic decisions that affect my life's course. That was Ginsburg's response. Roberts refused to say during his appeals court examination whether he believed in the right to privacy.
So also hiding behind saying, well, you really shouldn't ask me ahead of time.
Well, that's
really
what the Republicans
are
saying. Can you imagine? Here's a questioning a nominee for the not only for the Supreme Court justice, but for Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and you're not allowed to ask him about his opinions on different issues. The USA Today, in an editorial, said once again, it's a short quote. Three current justices have questioned whether a right to privacy exists. The court doesn't need a fourth, not least because the anti-privacy argument is a denial of history and basic American values. That's USA Today, which is not your left-wing, newspaper.
You know what's kind of wacky about all of this, David, is when I look back, like maybe within the last 30 years, I sort of thought that the people who were so incredibly protective of their individual rights were almost to the far, far right. You know, these people who would go and live out in the middle of the woods in their camps and say, we have the right and it's our privacy and the government's not going to tell us what to do. And it's all of a sudden here we see mainstream people in America saying, wait a minute, individual rights. I mean, we don't want the government telling us how to live our lives.
No, that's absolutely true. And you would think of it as individual, conservative. That's why I say that the conservatives right now are in this bizarre situation in some ways, in which they, when they argue about the authority of government, this is at the state and the federal, but let's just talk about the federal level, they say that they would restrain the right of government to protect people against big corporations and the concentrated power of big corporations.
Who says this?
They would the conservatives.
Okay.
Conservatives, the Republican Party is very clear that the little regulatory authority over the exercise of power by large corporations. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, they argue that the government should have almost unlimited right to exercise authority over individuals. Completely opposite, I think, of what most Americans would believe. A few days ago, last week, an appeals court upheld the right of the government of the United States, to seize a U.S. citizen and hold him or her, in this case it was a him, indefinitely. Now, the Bill of Rights talks about a speedy trial. That's not the Ninth or Tenth Amendment, but that's in the Bill of Rights. This is a very dangerous time in this country for somebody to be talking about the power of the federal government over our individual lives.
There was a quote by Mussolini that keeps coming to mind here as we see a government that on the one hand makes these little quips like, we want to make government so small we can drown it in a bathtub, but then increases the power of government and increases the autonomy of corporations and seems to work hand in hand with government and corporations to reduce our rights as free citizens of the United States and our rights to privacy and our rights to make determinations about our own lifestyles. And wasn't it Mussolini who talked about fascism being a very simple merger of corporatism and government?
Yes, in fact, that's almost the definition, of fascism. It's government on behalf of corporations. When it comes to corporations in the Bill of Rights, there's a whole nother show that we can do. But just in brief, corporations in the 1880s, by a Supreme Court, not decision, so much as what they call an obiter dicta, which is basically just somebody holding forth, on the Supreme Court, declared that corporations were people, They were persons. Mm-hmm. Now, it's bizarre, but nevertheless, they mm-hmm. declared that they were persons. Now, the 14th and 15th Amendments of the Constitution, which are basically the post-Civil War amendments mm-hmm. that gave slaves the right to vote and the like, they were, and you couldn't be stripped by due process of life and property, that those were used by the Supreme Court to, in fact, enforce the Bill of Rights, which in its essence is focused on the federal government, onto state governments themselves. And when the courts decided that corporations were people, were persons, then suddenly in the 1880s and now, but certainly between the 1880s and 1910, the Supreme Court in decision after decision after decision used that ruling, if you will, to declare that the states could not regulate corporations because they were people, while at the same time not using that ruling for the way that the amendments were originally drafted, which is to protect individuals and protect especially the freed slaves and black people from the tyranny of government. So, you know, now it's 100 years later, 125 years later, and we have, you know, in some ways, you know, a similar bizarre situation in which the federal government treats corporations in some ways the way I'd like them to treat individuals, and it treats individuals the way I would like them to treat corporations.
David Morris, our guest from newrules.org, a project of the Minneapolis-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. My name is Wendy Wilde. The time now is 9:46, 14 before 10 o'clock, and phones are open. If you'd like to jump into this conversation with a question or a comment, 952-946-6205. Corporations treated with the kind of respect and power and rights that we as people would think that we should be treated, then we people are treated with the dehumanizing effects of the Bush administration, which is more how we'd expect a corporation, a thing, to be treated. 952-946-6205. The Wendy Wilde Show on AM 950, Air America, Minnesota.
You're listening to The Wendy Wilde Show on AM 950, Air America, Minnesota.
Hello, I'm Emmett Carson, president of the Minneapolis Foundation. We've partnered for years with the Headwaters Foundation for Justice to support grassroots organizing for social change. The Walk for Justice is a great way to support the many groups dealing with many issues and from many communities who work for change, not charity. Please join us on the 10th anniversary.
Sunday, September 18th at 11:30, Boom Island, Minneapolis. Walkforjustice.org.
This is Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Ryback. I paid for this ad because I want you to know the truth.
I heard a negative attack ad on the radio yesterday about our Mayor Ryback, and I got upset. The people running these ads aren't telling the truth, and they don't know what I know about Mayor Ryback. My name is Sherman Patterson, and I live in North Minneapolis. People know me. I'm an outreach safety coordinator. I walk the streets with Mayor Ryback. I've seen his deep commitment to fighting crime and public safety. He's been out there in the neighborhoods working to bring communities together. He's rallied neighbors to come together to fight crime. And Mayor Ryback has stepped up to the plate and is putting more police officers on the streets. He's been in our neighborhoods working to solve our crime problems. Mayor Ryback doesn't just talk the talk, he walks the walk. We don't need politicians using crime to scare people. We need leaders like Mayor Ryback. I've been there, and so has Mayor Ryback. We need to be there for him in Tuesday's primary.
Paid for by R.T. Ryback for Mayor. Please remember to vote for mayor in Minneapolis this Tuesday.
Hi, this is Mike Fry, host of Animal Wise Radio and director at Animal Ark No-Kill Animal Shelter. Next time you're thinking of adding a four-legged family member, please adopt it from a no-kill shelter or a rescue group. Hundreds of happy, healthy, friendly dogs and cats are now waiting for new homes. For more information, visit our website at animalarkshelter.org. That's animalarkshelter.org.
And now back to the Wendy Wilde Show on AM 950 Air America, Minnesota.
Mama said there'll be days like this. AM 950 Air America, Minnesota. The Wendy Wilde Show at 949, 11 minutes in front of 10 o'clock. 66, some sunshine out there. The high temp today, 73 in the Metro. David Morris, our guest from newrules.org, a project of the Minneapolis-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. David, we've got some listeners calling in with comments and questions. We go first to Kurt in Minneapolis. Hi, Kurt. You're on AM 950 Air America, Minnesota.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi.
I have a couple quick points. One of them you're alluding to with the with Mussolini quotes and corporate personhood.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would really like to hear the Democratic senators on the committee ask Judge Robert about is how he distinguishes what Scalia has often derisively described as establishing rights that don't exist. Often, of course, he's always referring to the right of privacy. But
mm-hmm.
How about the right of corporations to have the exact same rights as if ever there was rights that didn't exist? That's the perfect
mm-hmm.
case.
Mm-hmm.
Second is, in his refusal to answer questions...
Kurt, we're starting to lose your phone. Can you get right to the point there?
I'm sorry. How is it that in legal courses we examine based on case law? Professors will often come up with a phony case, bring in different facts to it, and law students and others, and in fact at the bar, you'll have to apply the law as you know it to the facts given to you. So why is it that they have such a hard time during the hearings?
Very good. Thanks, Kurt.
Thanks.
David, did you follow those 2 points?
The second one, I'm not clear that I did follow, but the first one in terms of corporate personhood, I think is a very good question. And even though he probably would say, well, there's 100 years or 125 years of precedent for that, and there is 125 years of precedent for treating corporations as persons, but there has actually never been a Supreme Court ruling on that. Now, I know that's mm-hmm. going to be odd for anybody to quite scratch their head and figure that out, but in the 1880s, the cases involved the railroads, which were the big corporations at the time, and since railroads crossed state boundaries,
mm-hmm.
the question was, what authority did states have over the railroads,
mm-hmm.
and the railroads were the state legislatures, the railroads, many of the Supreme Court justices had been lawyers for the railroads,
You mean they had the same kind of insider cronyism way back in the 1800s that we have in the Bush administration today? was Halliburton there somewhere?
It was not Halliburton, but it was close.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, the
and
corruption.
And Dick Cheney was still there, wasn't he?
The corruption of the 1870s and the 1880s
yeah.
was, as we say, blatant.
Uh-huh.
You didn't need tabloids at that point to expose anything. But the Supreme Court was also populated by lawyers previously that had worked for railroad companies. And at one point, this was a railroad case. It had to do with the city of Santa Clara and the railroads. In this railroad case, in a decision which had nothing to do with the issue of corporations as personhood, the majority opinion started off from the bench basically saying, and we declare corporations as persons. And then the next decision said, well, that's what he said from the bench. So there's actually been a decision of the Supreme Court.
So nobody's challenged it?
No one's challenged it, and it would be very nice to have that issue come up, because I think when Americans understand, a corporation as a person, it
yeah.
lives forever, it has unlimited rights, it has
a lot more money by its nature.
It's a bizarre thing. It's an abstract legal notion, and the idea.
Hey,
that
my shoe! I'd like my shoe to now be recognized as a person. Can we do that? Can we acknowledge my shoe as a person and give it rights?
Well, one of the reasons that that you now have liquor ads on television is because corporations are people, and therefore they have the right to free speech.
Hey, let's take a quick call. Jeez, free speech for liquor. Let's go to Tom in Minneapolis. You're on the Wendy Wilde Show, Tom, with David Morris.
Yeah. Hi. Hello. Yeah, I'd like to ask your guest if corporations are persons, can corporations go to the polls and vote?
Hmm. Interesting, David.
Well, one would wish that there could be some at Camp Snoopy, for example, it allows you on certain rides depending on your height, because they equate that with age. Well, it would be sort of nice to have sort of a basic test for a person. If you can't crawl, you're not a person.
And yet corporations are given the right to use money to influence lawmakers legally.
Yes, they are.
They can't
although
vote
in that
them.
Case, the Supreme
yeah.
Court actually had decided that state laws, there's no federal law on this that I'm aware of, but it's state laws that you have the right to limit or prevent
corporations from giving directly to candidates. And so you do have certain laws that are related to that, but but of course you can just get around that by having every member of the corporation give, and then their families and their relatives and the like. But basically what the caller was asking is, no, they can't go to the polls and vote, but they certainly can vote with their power and their might in elections, and that is far, far more important than having them really walk into the to the ballot box and pull down that lever for one candidate.
David Morris from newrules.org, a project of the Minneapolis-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Our time is up. Great conversation. Thank you for giving us an earful on John Roberts. Let's wrap it up with you telling us one more time. This is George W. Bush's candidate for the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. What is the quote that you brought us from John Roberts?
This is the quote in a memo that he wrote as special assistant to Attorney General William French Smith in 1981 during the Reagan administration, and he referred to the, quote, so-called right to privacy.
Yeah, let's put this guy in Washington and give him a lot of power over us, huh? Tip the balance of the Supreme Court. Thank you so much, David.
You're welcome.
David Morris, his website is New Rules, newrules, newrules.org. This is the Wendy Wild Show on